Dickens, he surpassed his greatest expectations. Manhasset quickly came to see Steve's bar as the bar. Just as we said the city to mean New York City and the street to mean Wall Street, we always said the bar, presumptively, and there was never any confusion about which bar we meant. Then, imperceptibly, Dickens became something more than the bar. It became the place, the preferred shelter from all life storms. In 1979, when the nuclear reactor at Three Mile Island melted down and fear of apocalypse swept the Northeast, many Manhassetites phoned Steve to reserve space in the airtight basement below his bar. Of course, everyone had their own basements, but there was just something about Dickens. People thought of it first whenever doomsday loomed. Along with Sanctuary, Steve provided nightly lessons in democracy, or the special plurality of alcohol. Standing in the middle of his barroom, you could watch men and women from all strata of society educating and abusing one another. You could hear the poorest man in town discussing market volatility with the president of the New York Stock Exchange, or the local librarian lecturing a New York Yankees Hall of Famer about the wisdom of choking up on the bat. You could hear a feeble-minded porter say something so peculiar and wise that a college philosophy professor would jot it on a napkin and tuck it in his pocket. You could hear bartenders, in between making bets and mixing pink squirrels, talk like philosopher kings. Steve believed the corner bar to be the most egalitarian of all American gathering places, and he knew that Americans have always venerated their bars, saloons, taverns, and gin mills, one of his favorite expressions. He knew that Americans invest their bars with meaning and turn to them for everything from glamour to succor, and above all for relief from that scourge of modern life, loneliness. He didn't know that the Puritans, upon landing in the New World, built a bar even before they built a church. He didn't know that American bars descend directly from the medieval inns of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, which descended from the Saxon alehouses, which descended from the taberni along the roads of ancient Rome. Steve's bar could trace its lineage all the way back to the painted caves of Western Europe, where Stone Age elders initiated young boys and girls into the ways of the tribe nearly 15,000 years ago. Though Steve didn't know these things, he sensed them in his blood and enacted them in everything he did. More than most men, Steve appreciated the importance of place, and on the cornerstone of this principle, he was able to build a bar so strange and shrewd and beloved and wondrously in tune with its customers that it came to be known well beyond Manhasset. Everyone has a holy place, a refuge, where their heart is purer, their mind clearer, where they feel closer to God or love or truth or whatever it is they happen to worship. For better or worse, my holy place was Steve's bar. And because I found it in my youth, the bar was that much more sacred, its image clouded by that special reverence children accord those places where they feel safe. Others might feel this way about a classroom or playground, a theater or church, a laboratory or library or stadium, even a home. But none of these places claimed me. We exalt what is at hand. Had I grown up beside a river or an ocean, some natural avenue of self-discovery and escape, I might have mythologized it. Instead, I grew up 142 steps from a glorious old American tavern, and that has made all the difference. I didn't spend every waking minute in the bar. I went into the world, worked and failed, fell in love, played the fool, had my heart broken and my threshold tested. But because of Steve's bar, each rite of passage felt linked to the last and the next, as did each person I met. For the first 25 years of my life, everyone I knew either sent me to the bar, drove me to the bar, accompanied me to the bar, rescued me from the bar, or was in the bar when I arrived, as if waiting for me since the day I was born. Among this last group were Steve and the men. I used to say I'd found in Steve's bar the fathers I needed, but this wasn't quite right. At some point, the bar itself became my father, its dozens of men melding into one enormous male eye, looking over my shoulder, providing that needed alternative to my mother, that Y chromosome to her ex. My mother didn't know she was competing with the men of the bar, and the men didn't know they were vying with her. They all assumed that they were on the same page, because they all shared one antiquated idea about manhood. My mother and the men believed that being a good man is an art, and being a bad man is a tragedy, for the world as much as for those who depend on the tragic man in question. Though my mother first introduced me to this idea, Steve's bar was where I